So, this Sunday is Candlemas.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, is that a big deal?
Are you excited?
Really? Not really understanding what it is.
Well, you should be taking your decorations down, technically.
No, they came down on the 6th of January or 5th or whenever it is.
Ah, yeah, you see, you're still going sort of newfangled because the actual traditional date to remove all the greenery that used to decorate churches was Candlemas, which is the 6th of February, which is, of course, the celebration of the purification of the Virgin Mary and the presentation of Jesus in the temple, as we all know.
Yeah, of course. Everyone knows that.
And the other thing about Candlemas is that people also used to bring their candles
for
blessing to the church.
Okay.
So if you'd like your wick blessed, just bring it along.
It certainly could do with a blessing at this stage of my life. Thank you.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 317, the Candlemas episode of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast.
Get your wicks out.
My name is Nick Page. Oh, we're so childish. Unbelievable.
I know.
My name's Nick Page, and there's Joe Davis.
Hello. Great to be with you all again.
We are in a rather silly mood, actually, because we're recording at a slightly different time.
I know.
And you're a bit tired and all sort of worked out.
A bit hysterical. Yes. Recording between funerals and visits and all that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Very boring stuff. Yeah.
Anyway, how are you? Are you all right?
Oh, okay. I mean, it is, you know, the frantic season, and that's a good thing for me, and it's a sad time, and there's all sorts of stuff going on, but that's how it is. Great privilege, my job. I love doing it. Some are easier than others. When you're doing sort of older people who've lived a long and happy and good life, you know, they're quite easy to do, I guess. When you're doing 34-year-old women with two young kids who've died suddenly, that's not so easy to do. And yeah, draining, frankly. Mm. Yeah, it's hard. But it's not, you know, that's how it goes. But life is good. Grateful that I'm getting over a cold. You remember last week I said I'm really grateful I haven't got one of these terrible lurgies going. I immediately went down with a cold.
Of course. You see, that's God for
yeah,
you.
I know, yeah.
Basically, that's like saying I don't want to be a missionary because you're going to end up being a missionary, aren't you?
Of course you are. So I was quite grateful to be getting over that. Still celebrated Burns Night.
Still celebrating it.
Well, no, not still. I still celebrated it with the cold.
Oh,
is what I meant.
Oh, okay.
But it was a lovely thing because the whiskey, you know, purifies, I like to think, as does the haggis and the whiskey sauce and the neeps and tatties. All of it works.
I think the great thing about whiskey is it feels like it's doing you some medicinal good, whereas it isn't doing you no good whatsoever.
I'm sure
so,
it isn't.
You know, sort of honey and lemon with a drop of whiskey in it is one of the great drinks, I think, you know, and it just feels medicinal, but actually, nah, it's not really.
Oh, I tell you what I'm looking forward to as well. Mm. Do you remember me telling you about the wine group we set up in lockdown where the people dropped a bottle of wine and we decanted it into eight little glasses and, took it all? Well, the group is meeting up now, again, soon. And what we do is everyone brings a bottle of wine for us to taste a tiny sip of, not have a whole glass, I hasten to add. And then we all bring a kind of ramekin-sized dish. So we have this kind of eight-course meal with a wine flight. And it's just great fun. It's very delicious. Yeah.
With tiny little tasting dishes.
Tiny little things. So we got these kind of like tiny little cups from Paul Pottery. They're like, I suppose we'd call them espresso cups. But you make them with soup and that's all you get.
Oh,
and you have a wine with it. Yeah, so that's something fun that I'm great. I would love to do one of these with you. I really would. In fact, maybe we should do a Mid-Faith Crisis one. Let's just face it. It'd be great. How much fun would that be?
I just think it sounds like you're going back to your Baptist roots with tiny little glasses of wine.
Or
Ribena, as it always was.
I know. You
could
take the Baptist minister out of the church, but you can't get the church out of the Baptist minister.
Anyway,
enough of my waffle. How are you, dear boy?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. A bit cold in here because I haven't heated it up. But it's the snowdrops are out. Oh, that's so lovely. Yeah, we've got snowdrops in the garden. And it's sunny outside. And the world feels different.
A hope of spring. Well done.
Yeah. Six Nations starting. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not too... I wasn't too up on that. Okay, that's good news.
Oh, yeah. England are going to get beaten by everybody, but there you go. And of course, as I said, it's Candlemas. Happy Candlemas to you.
Thank you. I feel so happy because of it. Thank you.
I'm only really focusing on it because I wrote a little bit about it in the book on Christmas, and I'm also speaking at church this weekend, and so I got to think about it because that's the passage I've got to think of. I have no idea what to say.
Anyway. The Candlemas passage.
Yes. I quite like it as a festival, Candlemas, because I like it. Who doesn't like a candle?
Who doesn't want their wicks blessed?
Indeed. So yeah. I think it perhaps could become an official, part of the mid-faith crisis liturgical cycle. I think we could...
definitely should be.
We could make it huge. We could... A huge Candlemas, basically, yeah. One of those really big ones that you
you're starting to sound like Trump. It's going to be the best Candlemas
ever.
It's going to be the greatest.
Great. Everybody loves it. Anyway, yes. So apart from that, I'm good. I'm all good. Thank you. So we should get going, really.
Yeah, we really must. We've got lots to get through today. We held over this one from last week from Peter. He said, "Dear guys, warm greetings. Can't really say Happy New Year, can I?" No, you can't. He says he's looking forward to March. Correct, Peter. He said, "Listening to this week's episode, I'm struck again at how we, in brackets the church, have changed the meaning of words. You've touched on salvation, and I like Nick's idea of being in a safe place rather than going to heaven and not hell. In a similar vein, justice," he says, "if we go back earlier than the Greek to the Hebrew, is it not the case that there are two words that can be and are translated as justice?" And then it's tzedek, I think, righteousness, and mishpat, judgment. Interesting that often the King James Version is better at using these two words, for example, in Psalm 36, thus avoiding confusion. In an ideal world, righteousness, in brackets, balance, would ensure shalom. But it isn't an ideal world, and so judgment is needed to bring things back into balance. There may be an element of punishment in this, but the overall outcome of judgment is to restore. So two concepts which together constitute justice, and this justice was always intended to be restorative. How tragic that we have strayed so far away from this central scriptural theme. He says, "Great to be journeying with you in the 17. That's from Peter.
Well, I think it's very helpful. I think one of the things that we often do in theology is, historic theology, I suppose, is that people focus on the negative sides of things rather than the positives. So if you think about justice, you think about punishment.
Mm.
You don't think about putting things right, restoration, whereas there can be no justice without restoration anyway. Mm. The same is true actually in the Greek. The Greek word, diakosune, I only know this because I've been writing about it a while back, has a sort of sense of God stepping in to set things right.
That's a nice phrase.
Yeah. Do you know what? And so, or being in a condition acceptable to God, or being among conditions that are acceptable to God. So I think what we should do is always look for the sort of positive, uplifting kind of interpretations of these things, because that leads us into the way of love. Whereas we always sort of tend to look for the sort of, doom or punishment or smitey smitiness or worminess and all this kind of stuff, But there's a flip side always.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. And thank you, Peter, for that. Lorna said, "Hi, Joe. Would love you and Nick to discuss The Attached. Something about saying no to the deepest sense of who you are doesn't sit right with me anymore. I wonder what your thoughts are. Hope you're both doing well. I'm still loving and sharing the podcast and awaiting details of the house group." We all are, Lorna. But this is The Attachment, and it starts with a quote from Mark 8, verse 34. "Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, 'Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me.'" Okay, so far so good. And here's the commentary. "It is the same for us all, whoever. I am to deny myself, take up my cross and follow him. Every Christian is called to costly sacrifice. Denying yourself does not mean tweaking your behaviour here and there. It is saying no to your deepest sense of who you are for the sake of Christ. To take up a cross is to declare your life as you have known it forfeit. It is laying down your life for the very reason that your life, it turns out, is not yours at all. It belongs to Jesus. He made it, and through his death, he has bought it." Wow. there's a fabulous thing.
And doesn't this just illustrate what I was just talking about?
Yes, exactly. Exactly what you were just talking about.
There's a couple of ways that you could approach this.
Yeah.
And they've taken the sort of rather gloomy road, I feel, whoever yes. wrote this particular piece of commentary. I mean, yeah. there's certainly a sense of this in Paul, and yeah. of ownership, because Paul talks about being slaves of Christ and yeah. that kind of stuff. But also Paul talks about being transformed by Christ yeah. and conformed to Christ's mind, yeah. not enslaved to him in that sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. When I heard that, I just thought, well, it sort of diminishes both of us, doesn't it? This, you know, yeah. like if nothing of my life
yeah.
is mine, it's all Jesus. Nothing is to do. My life is not mine at all.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what's the point of it, really?
It's like God made us to be robots, but we're faulty and broken.
Yes.
And you know, we need to get made back into obedient robots again. Yeah, it's horrible.
I would prefer a kind of idea of joint ownership. You know, like mm. I think that's it. My life is, it is mine in a way yeah. because God made me.
Yeah.
So why make me if there's no point yeah. in being me? That's, it just seems exactly. stupid.
It does. It does. But I do think, I mean, Jesus does have some of those sort of harder things to say, you know, like losing your life to find it. And I want to go back to those because I still think they must have something meaningful to say to us. But how I would understand losing my life to find it is, it, you know, understanding it within the context of the capitalism that we live in and the kind of Western culture of get more to find happiness. You know, I think Jesus is critiquing that kind of stuff and say, and you know, when he says, you know, lay down your life for the sake of others and take up your cross and follow me, rather than seeing that as a very difficult, you know, you're a wormy worm and your only worth is in following me, why not see it as a, this is all part of what I'm teaching you about life in all its fullness. This is a part of it. Realizing that you're not playing by necessarily the cultural norms of the moment. You're seeing a bigger picture to the world, that it's beautiful and that God's kingdom is beautiful. And there's a way of living that is right and in harmony with the world and with other people. So that's what I think.
There's a strand of Christianity yeah. that hates humanity, I yeah. think.
Yeah.
That hates the very idea.
Do we blame Augustine yeah. for that, or did it go back earlier?
No, we don't, because it's too easy to blame him for yeah. everything. No, I mean, there's a whole line of this setting. And there was a strand of Jewish Gnosticism as well that did it as well. Mm. You know, and Christian Gnosticism as well. You know, mm. the idea that everything human is bad mm. and everything divine is good. But then, you know, they're almost ashamed of humanity. And so that line mm. in that, whoever wrote this writing, you know, saying denying yourself is saying no to your deepest sense of who you are for the sake of Christ. I don't think that's what denying yourself is at all.
No.
Because the deepest sense of who I am is a unique being, a unique creature called Nick Page, who is loved into being by God. That's the deepest sense of who I am. Why would I want to deny that?
Yes. And actually following the way of Jesus actually is sort of putting you back to your deepest sense.
Exactly.
It has been damaged by the world and has been damaged by parenting and, you know, all those things we understand a lot more about now, rather than the deepest sense of who you are is absolute trash. It's the complete reverse.
That's exactly right. In fact, I would say it's almost impossible to lay down your life for others if you don't have a very strong, deep sense of who you truly are.
Mm.
You know, who you really
That's
are
really good
and
point.
How you really valued.
Yeah. Yeah.
Laying down your life for your friends doesn't mean that devaluing yourself. It means valuing them highly. It means viewing them as precious. And that, and because you know exactly who you are,
yeah.
you can serve others. Yeah, well, I think it's kind of...
I don't know if that person meant what they wrote. There's lots to say about this. And there's lots to say about control and power. You know, we were talking on the Enneagram recently about how Enneagram 2s are perceived as the best women to have in the church. The 2 is the helper.
Oh, okay.
You know, and they lay down their lives, they serve their families, they serve their church, they serve their husband. They totally lost sight of who they are because they're so busy helping everyone else.
Mm.
And it's perceived that that's what Jesus meant for a disciple, for a female disciple to be. I mean, just no. Yes, to be kind and generous, and but to devalue yourself, to not love yourself, to not have a strong sense of yourself is just a terrible thing, I think. Yes. Lots more to say about that. Now, listen, I just want to mention John. John wrote in a beautiful email, but it was very long. But he was describing a number of amazing mystical experiences that he had had. And all of them were really revealing God's love rather than angry, judgmental God. It was too long, but it did make me think that maybe we should have a kind of mystical experience special. I would love to hear from our listeners. What have been the moments that you just can't explain where you really feel like you've encountered the love of God in a special way? I don't know how to describe it because it's mystical. In a mystical way, either in a dream or in an experience or, you know, in nature or with people in a church.
Well, I just think that'd be interesting. It could be quite baffling. I mean,
I'm sure
the problem
be.
I have thinking about mystical experiences I've had, and I haven't had that many, but ones that I would describe as mystical, as they're very, very hard to describe in words.
Yes,
indeed. And words tend to be what we rely on. But I think that's a great idea. Let's see if you've had a mystical experience. Yeah. This feels like a BBC helpline, doesn't it?
It does. If you've been affected by any of the issues on this podcast. Yes.
If you've had a mystical experience and you need to talk about it, then simply write to joe@midfaithcrisis.org and you can find a list of organisations that help with recovering mystics on our website.
Exactly. Okay, moving on. So Vicky wrote in following listening to the podcast entitled Neurodiverse Church. Easy for me to say, Neurodiverse Church. May I suggest the following links and books if you or the 17 are interested in this area that may be helpful to people? She said, our church has had a ministry in this area for a while, and although it's been plugging away quietly, it's now beginning to pick up and really be engaged with. And she's signposted a website that is, you know, got lots of resources and a book with All Your Mind, Autism and the Church. So we're going to put those links in the show notes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Put them on the website, yeah.
Okay, and very importantly, Susan has written in. And she says, as a Mancunian, Brains Faggots were a staple of our school meals in the 60s. And given the name, the combination of the thought of brains and offal was too much, almost as bad as tapioca, which Americans seem to love unaccountably. She said, our atheist teacher, who was lumbered with saying grace, used to say, may you be thankful for all you are given, and sit down and eat her own sandwiches with relief. Warm regards for an ish January. You've given me permission to have a big G&T. And that's from Sue.
Well, there we are. I told you they were a thing. I tell you what, I had enormous trouble finding the right link to put in the show notes last week to make sure that things didn't go bad on that subject.
Well done. I am sure you did. I will check out that link now. Tim wrote in and says, hi, Joe. He says, I was diagnosed with dyslexia in my late 40s. I only got diagnosed because my son had done the assessments, and on reading the report, I could see quite clearly that I had many of the traits. As a dyslexic person, I used to hate reading. When I was a young evangelical, I was told I had to read the whole Bible within a year. That was never going to happen. I was also told that I had to read the Bible every day. That wasn't going to happen either. Then, of course, there was every day with Jesus, just more reading. Being asked to read the lesson was seen as an honour, but it was no honour for me. Humiliating, maybe. He said, Sean Lambert's book has helped me to see that being a dyslexic person in my school years did to me. He uses the word trauma, and in the definitions he puts forward, I certainly see myself as having suffered trauma. I'm told dyslexia made me. He says, I don't agree. I would have liked to have grown up without it. I'm now taking time to think through all this with the hope that I can eventually see it as a gift. Keep up the good work. And that's from Tim. And then he says, P.S. Who knew that cheese would take off as a sign off? He says, I claim the original. Well, cheese, Tim. Thank
cheese.
You.
Cheese. Yeah. Well, I think a couple of things there. Thank you for that, Tim. Look, I think a lot of things do make us, but that doesn't necessarily mean we have to be grateful for them
in and of
themselves. Yeah. You know, lots of bad things happen that form us in one way or another, form our character. But I don't think you have to always be thankful for every part of that. So I can quite understand your feelings there. The other thing about reading the Bible is I wrote in, I think, the Badly Behaved Bible, you know, there's no reason why you have to read the Bible. You know, because actually for most of history, people couldn't read the Bible because they couldn't read. So, you know, that I don't think reading the Bible as such is an absolutely necessary part. Engaging with scripture is.
Yes,
so people would learn stuff, or they would, you know, they'd think about stories or learn Bible verses or whatever, and they would pray with them or reflect on them. But reading in and of itself is not actually mandatory.
I always think that's such a helpful reminder.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important. And Tim's email is great because, yeah, so much of what we do actually, looking back, I can see, you know, do you remember those times when you'd go around read the Bible in a group and you'd read a verse each or two? And I've done those. I've led those.
Yeah.
And of course, I've never thought for 1 minute about how some people might find that really quite frightening and challenging.
Yeah, exactly. And put them off coming.
Exactly. Especially if they get the bits with the names in, you know, that's bad for all of us, really.
Okay. Well, let's do this fun one from David, who, bless him, David was so moved by the song Is He Worthy?
Oh, yeah.
Answer, he is, by the way.
He is.
Just for the sake of balance.
In brackets.
Yeah. He actually rewrote all the lyrics about Worthing. In fact, and it was great.
Is it Worthing?
Yes, it is. So, I mean, it starts off, do you feel the town is broken? We do. Do you feel the pier's worth keeping? We do. And he says, but do you know that all the junctions stop the cars from getting through? We do. And it goes on, and it is absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much. That is on our Facebook page if you want to see the full thing.
That's fantastic. Thank you, David.
Yes. I have to say, we love the 17, don't we? I mean, how much fun are they? How perceptive are they? How great are they at writing in? Thank you so much, everyone that does write in. Hugely appreciate it.
Very prophetic, really, that opening line. Do you feel that Worthing is broken? It is. Because quite clearly it must be.
Yeah. No, but fear not. We're making Worthing great again.
Renaming the sea.
I don't even want to joke about that. Right, well, let's cut to the chase. This is from Jenny. Now, here's a question. She says, quick question. Have you guys ever spoken about baptism? If so, could you please direct me to the episode? Well, frankly, we have, and no, we can't, Jenny, because that would require us being organised and knowing what we've talked about in the obscurely named episodes.
I mean, if we have spoken about it, I don't think it would be a particular episode, would it?
I don't think we've ever devoted a whole episode.
No.
It's just a kind of passing thing.
Or is she meaning, have we ever spoken about being baptised? You know, have we have a discussion about whether or not we should do it?
A bit of ambiguity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, she says this. What the heck is it all really about? I've come from a charismatic background where the basic belief is that if you haven't been dunked underwater, you're going to hell. I don't think I could stomach that belief, even when I did subscribe to a Join the Dots charismatic faith. She says, I've also heard an American preacher, not a crazy one, though in this instance I'm less sure, suggest you should just keep getting dunked whenever you feel like it. Any thoughts, doubts, or usual waffle on the subject, most appreciated. And that's from Jenny.
I mean, well, this is very much your specialist subject, isn't it? I mean, you are still technically, I believe, a Baptist pastor.
By the skin of my teeth, I think, technically.
You're still there. And so I'm just going to sit back and listen to your words of wisdom on the whole subject, I feel.
Let me ask you, do you want my answer or the official Baptist minister answer?
I mean, I'd like a bit of both. Really,
oh, well, the short Baptist minister answers, yes, of course, it's still really important. Get baptised immediately.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you.
Only not immediately, because it takes ages to heat up the baptistry, doesn't it?
Oh, that's really true. You've got to allow time for the heater to work.
You have to put that great big thing in, like an element.
Also, if you are doing it in the sea, make sure the sea is in when you organise the service and not as they did at my last church, where it was right out, low tide, and the poor person got up to their ankles having walked half a mile out to sea.
That's brilliant.
I think there's two ways of approaching it. You can give a soundbite answer to this, which never does an argument justice, but that's what people want, isn't it? Soundbite answers. or you dive down the rabbit hole and you unpick the whole thing. And I think if we're prepared to do that, I think I want to come back to a place where I say, yeah, I do think baptism is really important, but probably not for the traditional reasons given. What I think is that this opens up for me, as all the sort of questions about sacraments do, really, you know, what are they all about? Why a piece of bread and a little glass of wine? Why baptism? What are the other sacraments? Marriage, I believe. What is it about these sacraments that have persisted, have endured, that people over 2,000 years later are still saying this is somehow important, and we're getting and we're going to do it, and we're going to keep it. Now, I feel, you'll not be surprised to hear, a little bit free and loose with the kind of rules governing this stuff. But how I understood my own baptism was, look, this was the sort of physical demonstration that something profound has happened inside me. My allegiance has changed. My whole direction of my life is changing. I'm now following Jesus, and I'm becoming part of this community of followers of Jesus. And this is a really incredibly significant moment. I didn't really spend much time thinking, how weird is it that I'm still wearing a shirt and being baptized? You know, because when you go to a swimming pool, you generally just wear swimming trunks. How weird to go into a baptistry fully clothed, and the fact that there was a couple of people dunking me backwards and coming out. And, you know, because I felt overjoyed at the symbolism that was being represented in that moment. Now, there might be other ways of representing, ways of showing that I follow Jesus. Maybe they could have just thrown a party or had a big meal, and maybe we could have done something that says, hey, I'm with Jesus now. But baptism's as good as any, I think. I find all rituals a bit weird, but it doesn't mean I want to do away with them. They're just a bit weird. Taking a little piece of bread, taking a cup of wine, well, that's weird too. But I actually find meaning in it. And I miss it when we don't do it. So my answer is that I think if the whole world is saying this is just too weird, like this is a barrier, I just don't understand why we do it, I'd be up for revising it, come up with something better than baptism. You know, because there's all sorts of links. There's stuff about death, and there's resurrection, there's dying to old life, coming to new life, there's identifying with Jesus, there's becoming part of a community. It's packed full of meaning, actually. But what you can then do is go off on one and sort of start making the sacrament, you know, worshipping the sacrament and developing all sorts of weird theologies. But my point is, look, what's the whole purpose of being a Christian? Why are we here? To bring in the reign of God's kingdom would be one way you might say it. I want to find a better way of saying it. To live in harmony with God, my fellow humanity, my fellow creatures, the world, the sea, the environment. You know, to live well, to live joyfully and happily. I still think Jesus speaks to those really primal, important things. And, you know, yeah, Jesus said, repent. Be baptized, and I understand that as pretty much rethink the way you've understood the world. Let me take on my outlook on life. There's a God. God is good. God loves. Let's forgive people. Let's include people. Let's love people. That turns out that is the most powerful force in the world. In fact, far more powerful than any military in the world. And you know, let's have a symbolic way of welcoming you into this new kind of life. And if people hate baptism and find it too weird, find another way of doing that. That's what I think. Long answer. Sorry.
There's a lot in there.
Sorry.
I think that, well, what I would say is I would say I wouldn't be up for changing it.
Okay.
I don't think we should change it. Because actually, I think it's basic. It's just a basic human function of washing. You know, like it's a very fundamental human activity, just as the bread and wine are kind of fundamental human activities, but given symbolic power. And because I think it's one of the few things that Jesus sort of directly commands us to actually do. Now, whether we do it in exactly the same way is another matter. But nevertheless, that with with making disciples and sharing bread and wine in commemoration. Mm. One of the few ritual bits or active bits that Jesus says we should do. So I don't think you can change that. And I don't think the church needs to. I am, in fact, strangely, I'll tell you a little story. I am an expert on this.
Okay. Say more.
Because I've written a book on it. Well, when I say I've written a book on it, someone thought I had. I had a conversation with a lady once. She came up to me and she said, I love that book you wrote. I said, oh, yeah, thank you very much. Which one? She said, the one on baptism. I said, I haven't written a book on baptism. And she said, are you sure? And she started to have this argument with me about whether or not I'd written a book on baptism. So maybe I have written a book on baptism and I am quite expert and I just don't know it. But I do know a bit about the history, if you want that, or the culture of it. You know, as I said, I think it's really important because it's one of the key instructions, if you like, of Jesus. I think the problem is exactly what you said, that the symbolic act becomes sort of an efficacious act. It becomes more than that. It becomes a thing that you have to do in order to get into heaven. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it starts to get
obviously
wonky,
the practice itself emerges from the Jewish cultural background.
Yeah.
John the Baptist did it, hence the name. You know, it's just washing, it's drenching. The thing is, we call it baptism and it sounds really special, but it's a Greek verb that means to drench, to wash, to bathe.
Yeah.
You know, so actually you could call him John the Bather or John the...
Yeah, so could we just have a shower at the front of the church now?
You could. John the Drencher. I mean, you know, in Acts they did it in some puddles and or something, whatever, you know, go wherever.
Or in a sort of more comedy moment because someone just pour a bucket of water over your head.
You could do it like those gunge tanks.
An ice bucket just for fun.
You sit under it and say, do you accept Christ? Pull the handle. That's it. it's about washing. I mean, that's the symbolism. And then in the early church, it was done at sort of core times, Easter and particularly, mainly, but also sometimes Pentecost, probably Candlemas. Who knew?
Yeah.
But I don't know. No, not Candlemas. I just wanted to remind people. But what I always find interesting is for the early church, they made it this big symbolic moment. You had to lead up. You spend all year preparing for it, often years preparing for it.
Yeah.
You go into the baptistry. You take off all your clothes, which I think we've mentioned before would make services more appealing to many people and possibly less appealing, depending on who was doing it.
Not if I was being baptized.
Exactly. Exactly. You could think something. You think, look at it, list. You think, I'll stay away from that one. Anyway, you know, you go down the baptistry. So you take off your old clothes. You go down into the water.
Yeah.
You go under the water. You come up the other side.
Yeah.
Because it's a symbolism of crossing the river. You get given a new set of clothes by the church.
Nice.
You get given milk and honey to drink because you've entered the promised land. You get anointed with oil because you are now an anointed one, a Christos, a Christ, a little Christ.
Mm.
So in other words, the whole thing is a symbolic reenactment of the death, the resurrection, and the mission of Christ.
Yes.
So if you put that in place, that's why it's really important. That's why I think baptism is really important. If it's what you were saying, it's this symbolic ritual, hugely symbolic, hugely important. And I think to be baptized is to align yourself with historic Christianity, with the millions of people Christians who've gone before you.
And of course, just as Jesus wanted, the church has done nothing but argue about the correct way to do it
through
the centuries. Should you just have a little light bit of water on your forehead, or should you have full immersion, or should you, I don't know.
And the problem comes because the church then argues you can't be a Christian without being baptized.
Exactly.
You can't be saved.
Yeah.
To which the answer is, well, was the thief on the cross baptized?
Yes. Did he stop? Did they say, oh, it's okay, he wants to get baptized before we go any further?
Today you'll be with me in paradise, but not unless you somehow escape from where you are at the moment and go and wash. You know, that it's not a kind of a thing that has to happen at all, but it's a thing I think that is in the mainstream of Christianity. And it's important from that point of view.
Yes. That's what I meant when I said I want to be flexible with it, because I don't think it's a prerequisite to you being a follower of Jesus and being included in the kingdom. I don't think any of that stuff. But just it's a bit like I heard, you know, like it's not very like translating the Bible, someone once told me, into Vietnamese or something, you know, you wouldn't say Jesus saying, I'm the bread of life, because they had no bread. You'd say, I'm the rice of life.
Rice, yes.
You know? I just think, well, I don't know what the equivalent would be with baptism, because everyone washes and everyone has water. But, you know, I think we can be open to interpret it differently. But what a mistake would be to say, well, baptism is a bit anachronistic, doesn't really matter anymore, so let's do away with it, without putting something in its place to symbolise all those things you've just mentioned, because surely that stuff is quite important, and important for us as well to ground our faith. I mean, a lot of people say, well, I didn't have a sort of Damascus Road experience, I grew up in the church or whatever, but I think to have a moment in your life, just like it's healthy to have a funeral at the end of your life, I think it's really healthy to have a moment in your life where you're sort of nailing your colours to the mast.
Yes.
This is what my life's actually all about.
Yes.
And there's a community of people celebrating that with me who have also given their lives to the same cause. I can't think of many better ways to do it than baptism. But yeah, like I say, maybe a shower would be more appropriate now.
Well, I think you want something with a bit of a ritual, I think, because as humans, we respond to that. I mean, the problem is, obviously, as we were saying, the thing is these things become sort of efficacious in and of themselves. They become, they have an inherent power to them, I think, symbolically. But then people think that's something you've got to do. So a ritual, a symbol becomes a rule.
Yes.
And this is really why infant baptism became so popular. It was driven largely by parents worrying that their children would not get, you know, to heaven, as it were, if they died young.
If they died young, yeah.
And
sure.
In early medieval times, when you got plague going everywhere, that happened a lot. So that's why you get your child baptized very quickly.
Mm.
I can see the strengths of infant baptism, because it brings people into the church. And it's a rite of passage, and people connect to it in a very real way, I think.
Mm.
And they want their child to be acknowledged in that way. But I think, you know, it has to go alongside something else, I think, because that's not really how Jesus would have done it. Having said that, in Acts, we know whole households were baptized, so we can assume that the children were as well.
Mm.
So I do have some issues over it, but I think as a symbol, as a historic part of our faith, I feel very strongly about it. I think it's core, actually, to being Christian.
It's interesting, because I expected you to come down very heavily pro, and the more I thought about it, I was surprised how still very positive I am about it. And it brings us back to that old bugbear of mine about, you know, I do think ritual's helpful, but like I dropped grace because I was embarrassed by it, because, you know, it was done in embarrassing ways and difficult ways. And I didn't feel, but now I find myself very unsatisfied with my favourite part of the day when I'm sitting down in the evening and having a meal, either just with Rachel or with others. It doesn't feel right to not stop and be really grateful. Now, sometimes we just do that. Pretty much every meal we do say, I am so grateful for this meal and this food.
That's great. Yeah.
But again, I would really argue in favour of recovering grace. I just haven't found a good way of doing it, particularly. I know you're far more at ease now, and I feel myself getting more at ease with it now I've gone through my angsty stage of my mid-faith crisis. Because I am grateful to the divine for the fact that I have food on my table, especially in a world where so many people don't.
Yeah, well, we don't always say it, but, you know, we say it at key moments or when we're celebrating together. You know, that seems just natural to do, really.
And when you want to make me feel inadequate, I've noticed.
Well, no, because I think there are many ways that I can make you feel inadequate. I don't need to do it through that, really.
No, true.
Well, I mean, what I would say about baptism, I just thought of this. You know, part of my other work is working with an organisation called Open Doors, supporting the persecuted church. One of the things we produce is a thing called the Top 50, which is it's a world watch list. The world watch list is the list of countries where Christians face greatest persecution. So we produce a Top 50 booklet each year. And this year's has a most amazing picture of a secret baptism in a flat in, I can't remember where, but this guy is in a tiny, cramped sort of bath, being baptized in what doesn't look like great water. you know, to be honest. And it's got none of the glory of the ritual of, you know, that I've been talking about. It's got no sort of font or anything like that. It's in a flat somewhere, hiding away from the authorities. But this person wanted to be baptized. Yeah. They needed to do it to show their commitment.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter where you find the water.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter where you do it or what surrounds it. What matters is the commitment, the symbolism, the obedience, in a sense, to what Jesus sort of said. So, you know, that's what I feel. You know, I kind of feel if they're going to do it wherever they can, then we need to protect that, I think.
Well, that's really interesting. And it opens up for me this wider area about spirituality in the 21st century, church in the 21st century. What should it look like? What should we keep? What would we ditch? And I may interview some people about this. Who knows, in the coming months? But I think what we're saying is actually whatever the church looks like in the 21st century, surprisingly, perhaps, we would still keep baptism as very much a ritual we would want to keep. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's anything surprising in it. I would keep baptism. I would keep communion. I would keep a lot of the rituals. Actually, I would rediscover them. I think they become more important, not less important in the 21st century.
Yeah, great. What would you ditch? Sermons?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, maybe the sermon. Maybe church notice sheet. I don't know. You know, some of the other rituals.
How dare you?
Anyway, we should wrap up, shouldn't we?
We should. We should invite people to take part, though, shouldn't we? Okay, so that's our views on baptism. What are your views on baptism? So all 17 of you, I'm asking directly now. And also, what rituals do you think we should keep? What would you ditch? How would you reinterpret rituals? You know, if you didn't have baptism, what would you replace it with? I can't think of anything better, but we have such brilliant listeners. They may well have some great ideas. So let us know. Joe@midfaithcrisis.org.
Well, yes, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for recommending the podcast to others. I've had a few emails recently from people who've come to the podcast through recommendations. That's very nice.
That's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, you get better friends is what I'd say. And thank you to those who support the podcast. That's pretty wonderful. And we will be back with you next week to celebrate, presumably, the first Sunday after Candlemas.
Candlemas.
Yeah.
Can't wait.